Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 155, being recorded on the 23rd of November, 2016, with special guest Donovan Brown. I'm Sujit, and on Skype with me, I have Kale, Russell, and our special guest, Donovan. And our listeners may notice that Evan's not with us today. It's the Thanksgiving week or weekend coming up in the United States, and Evan has taken the week off for some much-needed vacation, I'm sure. So he is not with us today, but we have Russell from our host from the UK, who is being gracious to join us today, and also was the person who introduced Donovan to this show and brought him on as well. So we're really thankful to Russell for bringing Donovan, and thankful for Donovan for making the time to do this podcast on a holiday weekend. So let's get started as usual with some of the... Before I forget, a quick programming note here, since we're talking about the timing of this podcast. So last week we recorded two shows, Alison might recall. So as a result, this week's show is actually going to be airing. It'll be released next week, so the week after Thanksgiving. So this week we'll cover another topic, which our listeners will get in about 24 hours from now. So, with having said that, let's do the quick rundown of the news. And Russell was giving me some very hot news just before the show started. So, Russ, you want to just talk about it briefly, and maybe we can all chime in on that?
Yeah, well, the big news was that single VM instances now come with an SLA. So it's been one of the things we've always preached and banged on about in the past has been, you know, if you want to get an SLA on your VM instances, you've got to make sure you've got two of them there. That's no longer the case. So as long as you're using premium storage on the back end, we can get an SLA on a single instance VM.
That is pretty fantastic. Now, I don't know if anyone knows, but does Amazon have something similar, or are we playing catch up, or is there something unique to Azure? I didn't really check that. But this is excellent news, though, for all our customers that use IaaS, because as Donovan was saying just before the show, you know, having normally using IaaS is a pain in the neck. You got to have at least two instances and the availability sets and whatnot, and looks like now you can probably get away with not doing all of that. If you have, I mean, I think the recommendation may be to always have more than one IaaS VM, but you don't have to have that now. There's a certain SLA you'll get with just a single VM, which I think is very, very nice.
Yeah, the interesting thing is that it's not due to a sort of a new feature announcement or anything like that. It's just because the platform and the stability of the platform, the resilience on the back end now is just good enough that they can afford to offer that SLA. It's not that there's, you know, been some overnight work that said, right, we can now do it because of X, Y, and Z. It's just a thing that's happened as part of the evolution of the platform on the back end. So it's quite nice.
Right. I think there was some work, Evan may have mentioned this a while ago, there was some work being done to update the VMs with almost no impact to the user. I think that may be part of this, right? Because at some point the host machines have to be updated, and I think they've probably able to do that with minimal downtime now and not the usual, you know, shutdown warning and whatnot.
Yeah, the I think they call it pause or something, isn't it, where it can be pause for seconds instead of minutes. And the other thing with the you know, all those network enhancements that have come recently as well, I guess that might have helped as well. So that it's, again, it's gradual stuff.
Yep, and I guess the key
people
point
don't really know, which is just ongoing progress.
Has to be premium storage, I think, is what you mentioned. So that's the key point over here.
Yep.
Excellent. Thanks for that. What else, Kale? Anything else you want to pick up from the notes?
Yeah, I dropped one in there about this Azure Advisor. This one kind of snuck in there on me. I don't know if you guys saw it, but it's a new thing that's out there in Azure that allows you to basically kind of get some recommendations about your system. I know we had a show a long time ago with Bernard. think it was Bernard was on from there talking about some of the early of what this thing actually became, which is really nice now. So there's a nice dashboard that comes in and can tell you about, things like what we just talked about, high availability, where you maybe have spun up one VM to do something and you forgot about going back and actually making it highly available and that kind of thing.
Right.
I don't know if it's feeding directly from Security Center, but there's a security section, there's a performance section, there's a cost thing. So it's essentially like a little kind of thing that you can run there that analyzes what you have up in Azure and gives you some suggestions on how to make it better from all these different angles, high availability, security, performance things.
Cool. Oh, and also, I guess to tie into the IaaS theme that was mentioned earlier, now there's a feature where you can set the VMs to automatically shut down on schedule. I think that was some of the pain points that people have experienced, where they start up a VM to do some testing and forget to take it down, and then next thing you know, at the end of the month, they realize they've rung up this big bill. So now you can go into the portal. It has to be an ARM-based VM, but you could go in there and specify that, okay, this should shut down every day, say at 7 o'clock in the evening, and then you can specify a webhook as well, which will be called 15 minutes prior to your shutdown. So you can get some kind of notification in your internal system that, hey, this VM is about to go down. If you need it, you got to go and take some action to keep it going. So I think that's something that is going to be very well received.
Yeah, it's a nice little feature that, because it's something that everybody usually wants to implement if you're just spinning up the odd VM for doing something that you occasionally do and you keep forgetting to put it down. So you have to resort to automation accounts, which is a simple enough job to do, but it's just nice that they've recognized that it's a very popular use case and, yeah, build it into the platform.
Plug right into the portal. Yep. What else?
And
Go
another
ahead.
one that sticks out here is the CDN, and we're actually to tease it, we have a I think we're going to be talking about CDN here in a couple shows, but this one's kind of cool because basically we've announced this token authentication mechanism that works with CDNs. So typically in the past, when we run these CDN networks, which basically is these very large networks across the world that can distribute data, like they could be your JavaScript files, your CSS, even content, static content. These things were out there, but it was not easy to authenticate them. In fact, it wasn't. They were public facing. So in that case, basically, it was just anything that could be out there in the public was allowed to be through there, but the private stuff you had to serve through a different mechanism. This allows that feature to be able to use a token-based authentication mechanism. So the edge nodes in the CDN can actually use that token to authenticate the user.
That's nice, very nice. And then there were a few updates here, kind of in the IoT space. So I think we did have a brief, and I think we're going to do another session on IoT coming up soon. So it'll be good to talk about these then. But generally, the IoT Hub device management service is now generally available. I think that was in preview before, and this is a service that you can go in and configure all your devices as a way to authenticate them, make sure that the devices that are connecting in and sending in messages are only the ones that you have put out there, being able to send updates to those devices, firmware updates, etc. So that feature is now publicly generally available, I should say. Another thing in the IoT space is this concept of the IoT Hub IP filter. And when I read this, right, so this is a way to automatically say, generally, IoT Hub is supposed to be kind of open because you're getting messages from all these IoT devices, possibly all over the world, coming from different IP addresses. But I think my suspicion is that in response to the recent distributed denial of service attack that we had with the webcams and whatnot, that was a couple of weeks ago, I think, they've added this IP filter feature now, where you can say that this IoT hub can only accept messages from this IP range or ranges, and therefore you kind of limit the attack surface from where the messages can come in. And so, it's a nice feature, but my suspicion is that it's somehow related to that. Oh, it's a response to that DDoS thing that happened a few weeks ago. And then the final thing on the IoT space is also the IoT Gateway SDK. So the IoT gateways are or devices that are possibly on the edge of the customer's network. For example, it could be at the edge of a building if a building has a lot of IoT devices in it, and so that gateway would kind of be like a funnel of all the messages, and then that gateway would in turn talk to Azure, and then you know funnel up all the messages into Azure. So that whole SDK for doing that, for being for building these smart gateways, is now generally available. So if you guys are into that, then make sure you take a look at it.
One other thing, just the last thing I wanted to mention was around the Azure Stack stuff. So there's some new PaaS service offerings that are available in TP2 of Azure Stack. So the Azure App Service, which includes web apps, API apps, mobile apps, and even some updated versions of SQL and MySQL. These are available with the TP2 bits. I think there's some other stuff that was included in there as well, like QStorage and Key Vault and things. So I think Stack seems to be filling out here now with a bunch more services to actually make it real for you know, these workloads that are complex and not just based on ISVMs and things.
Yeah, I like that one actually. So that's really making it more and more full-featured now, having that in Azure Stack. All right, I think that's a quick good round, kind of roundup of all the latest Azure news. So let's turn the mic over to our special guest today, Donovan Brown. Donovan, I'm sure a lot of our, most of our listeners already know who you are because, you know, you do feature quite prominently in a number of Microsoft events. I think most recently in the Connect event. But why don't you give everyone a quick update into what you do with Microsoft and what your passion is?
Sure. So my name is Donovan Brown. I'm a senior DevOps program manager for Microsoft, which means I'm responsible for the DevOps vision on top of Team Foundation Server and on top of Visual Studio Team Services all up. So before I joined Microsoft, I was a process consultant, which means I flew all over the world installing and implementing Team Foundation Server from its inception to until I joined the company. And because I'm a certified Scrum Master, I would stay on staff with our customers, and I would help them come from the waterfall world into the agile world using Team Foundation Server. I was recruited by Microsoft to come and help sell Team Foundation Server, so I was on the sales org in DX when I first joined. And then shortly thereafter, I moved over to the product group where I am today, where I'm a PM for DevOps.
Excellent. So, Russell, I believe, how did you connect with Donovan?
So we run a boot camp for partners every 6 months, and because I was new to the team, I've changed roles within Microsoft, and I'm now a CSA partner facing. We had a session just before that partner boot camp whereby we all got to spend some time with various parts of the product group, and Donovan was the very first character that was up there giving us a great talk on DevOps. So I think we only had about an hour of your time, Donovan, but it was really inspirational. So I thought he'd be a good candidate to get on the podcast and pass that message and stories on to the rest of the world.
Oh, fantastic. I'm glad it had an impact. I remember that was in that conference room. There was a lot of people from all over the world there, if I'm not mistaken.
In the big one, yeah. The one that we were in was just a small one. So, yeah, but it went on to the boot camp. And I think in the boot camp we had about 650-odd partners, something like that,
wow,
in there. So, yeah, it was quite a heavy-duty week. So it's 5 days of intensive Azure, what do you call it, sheep dip, where you just get hosed with all the Azure information that goes on. Yeah, and DevOps was, you know, obviously it's a large part of our work streams nowadays.
Oh, for sure. It's important to make sure that we're able to have a highway. We always joke that all roads lead to Azure, and we want to make sure that from the Microsoft perspective, when it comes to implementing DevOps, we reduce as much friction as we possibly can so that no matter what workload it is that you want to run on Azure, we've given you this highway through Visual Studio Team Services and TFS that will allow you to take the value from the fingertips of your developers and deploy that directly into Azure for you, which is what we were demonstrating at Connect. Is a lot of what we've been doing around containers and what we've also been doing around mobile, because obviously Azure has a lot of components for mobile as well. So we're constantly trying to figure out how can we further reduce the friction such that Visual Studio Team Services and Azure together are just like a perfect combination.
Yeah, so one of the sort of interesting things that I find when I'm talking to customers is that they've come across Visual Studio Online or they've used TFS on premises in the past, And they found it lacking in some of the integrations with maybe, you know, maybe they want to do Android apps or they want to do iOS builds or something like that. What are the big fundamental changes between VSO days and VSTS?
One of them is the fact that we now own Xamarin and HockeyApp, which basically, I always joke that we bought mobile DevOps. Literally, Microsoft's like, why go build it? We're just going to go buy HockeyApp. We're going to go buy Xamarin, and we're going to combine that with the power of Visual Studio Team Services, and we're going to be able to offer a complete mobile DevOps pipeline out of the box, like instantly, and that's exactly what we did. Now, if you were looking at Team Foundation Server, and back when it was called VSO, we were still in this transition phase of trying to get our builds to be multi-platform, to be able to be more friendly to external tools that wanted to integrate inside of our system. And now that we're on the verge of 2017, and then we have 2015 TFS already out there, and we have VSTS, which is its current name, it's a completely different product. And I tell everyone, if the last time you looked at TFS was 2013, it's time for you to take another look, because it's drastically different in all the right ways. Our build agent actually runs natively on a Mac, on Linux, and on PC, which is what gives us the ability to build your Android apps, your iOS apps on Macs if you want us to, or if you want to build your Android on a Linux machine, you can do that today. And then you want to build your Windows on a Windows machine, you can do that today, all with the exact same system. So as far as the developer's concerned, he just checks in his code, and then in the back end, Team Services or TFS will find the appropriate agent on the appropriate OS to go compile those binaries for you and produce the IPA or the APK files that you need to then distribute using HockeyApp, which will then allow you to take those binaries that were produced on whatever platform was necessary, and then distribute them to your Android devices or to your iOS devices over the air. So there's no more having to tether your device to a machine that has the binaries on it. You simply launch the app again. If you already have it, you'll get a notification there's a new version, or you simply go and load the HockeyApp app on your device, and then you're able to go through and find all the versions of the different apps you want and just install it right over the air. And these are alpha and beta bits, so they never even saw the stores. And your testers are able to then go off and start doing exploratory testing, manual testing, sending back feedback. We can collect crash analytics, custom telemetry right from those devices, and then use that information to make sure that what we've produced is ready for the store. And using Team Services, literally deploy directly to the store for you. So it's literally hands off, no human intervention from the time that the developer checks in code to the time that that binary is sitting in a store ready for your customers to download and use.
Yeah, that's a great story, and I guess that gives people confidence as well. That's the whole thing I find with VSTS. Now, once you set it up at the beginning of your project, you just know that when you check code in, you know, if something goes wrong, you're going to know about it before it goes anywhere near any of your user-facing environments.
Absolutely. And that's one of the safeguards there, is because we can run unit tests during your build. Should any of those unit tests fail, we can obviously stop and alert you. We can also calculate your technical debt and share that information with SonarQube. If you have gates set up in SonarQube for technical debt, if any of those gates were to fail, that can actually be sent back down to your build, and your build can actually fail because you failed a gate that you have set up inside of SonarQube for technical debt. We can run your automated test in Xamarin Test Cloud, or if you're already using one of our partners like Perfecto Mobile's Test Cloud, we can run the automated test for your mobile device against physical hardware. And should any of those tests fail, again, report that back down into Team Services and fail builds or fail releases, such that you know that if you've gotten green lights all the way along, you're in really good shape of deploying something that your customers are actually going to get value out of, and not, oh my God, we just put some random bits into a server and we hope that they work. They've been validated over and over again before they reach our customers.
Yeah. Donovan, I had one question about on the mobile side. If you're using like the, and I don't know this, that's why I'm asking, so I'm kind of new to this, but the HockeyApp and being able to correct like crash dumps, let's say, like something did really bad happen or something like that, when that, is that able to be like even routed back even into like, you know, the work? So basically we could say this is a bug and like link it with an actual bug and those kind of things, or is there different dashboards they go to say, here's what's happening? It goes to it like a hockey dashboard and then they go into VSTS, or is there better integration there? I wasn't sure.
All right, so the answer is yes to like everything you just said, right? So if you want to go to HockeyApp and view all the crashes, you can do that. you can actually wire up HockeyApp to Team Services and say, every crash that comes in here, I want to automatically show up as a bug inside of Team Services. So if your developers only want to go to Team Services, they can see the exact same information that they would see if they were to go directly to the HockeyApp portal itself. And it does, it's not just crashes coming across as bugs. HockeyApp also allows you to collect feedback, which could be positive feedback, like, wow, I love this new feature, or this over here, I really like this, do more of this. That information also gets shown in HockeyApp and then can be turned into a user story on the Team Services side. So that feedback can come back to the developers directly inside of Team Services as well. And so there's a great integration between HockeyApp and Team Services. But one thing I want to mention there as well is that HockeyApp is actually able to connect to a lot more than just Team Services. So if you're a company who's already using Jira or you're already using some other bug system or some other work item tracking system, HockeyApp actually has the ability to connect to those systems as well. I wrote an article recently on ALM Blogs about best of both worlds, where I compare and contrast people who are building a DevOps pipeline all up their own, where they have basically as many vendors as they can possibly find and they're trying to build the best of breed. And then you have an offering like Microsoft's where you can literally get everything that you need from one vendor. But I need to be really careful there, because I've said that in front of a customer before and they're like, oh, we don't want everything from one vendor. It's vendor lock-in and you guys will never get it all right and you guys are trying to boil the ocean. Like, they got very defensive and like almost upset that I said we had everything that you needed, even though it's a fact. But so I want to be very clear that every piece of what Visual Studio Team Services offers can be replaced with the tool of your choice. So if you want your bugs to go somewhere else other than Team Services, HockeyApp will happily do that. If you want your source code to come from GitHub, our build system inside of Team Services will happily go to GitHub for you, watch it for commits, and trigger continuous integration for you. So yes, we have literally everything that you need from beginning to end, but any piece of it can be replaced with a tool that you might already have an investment in, so that you understand that you're not locked in to one vendor, but man, when you see it all working, you're going to be wondering, why would I add more complication to this scenario than necessary? Because I honestly believe that we are able to compete in every vertical when it comes to DevOps now.
And today I was thinking about this, about to ask you that same question, because when I talk to some of our enterprise developers who are doing iOS or Android development, and I say, you know, have you considered hosting your code in VSTS? They look at me like very strangely, like, you know, that's Microsoft, you know, where I don't use anything Microsoft today. Why would I use VSTS? So how do you, I mean, I think you partially addressed that just now, but do you see any of that, and how do you kind of speak to those kind of people?
I see it every day of my life, right? Where someone, I say Visual Studio and people immediately shut down, because Visual Studio historically has never been for them. Visual Studio is for Windows and .NET. And if you're not Windows and .NET, they assume that there's nothing that we have to offer to them, mm-hmm. which could not be further from the truth. With our build working on both Linux, Mac, and Windows, we can literally build any language you want, and we can deploy it to any platform you want. If you go back and watch any of my recent sessions that I've done in Ignites and things like that, I say it over and over again, any language, any platform. And I on my Twitter, I'm like, bring it. Tell me what language you want, and tell me what platform you want, and let me go prove to you that I can do this. That word Visual Studio does not mean Windows.net. Think about it, guys. It's source control. The source control that we offer, and we're very unique because we offer you two different types of source control. One of them is centralized, which is our historical one, and we also support Git. So all of those people who are out there using GitHub and paying for private repos, in my opinion, are wasting some money, because we give away our source code. We make $0 on all of our source code because we don't charge you for Git. We don't charge you for Team Foundation Server version control. Even if you're using private repos, you get unlimited private repos for free. So if you're out there spending a dime for a private repo, I can immediately affect your bottom line right now, no matter what language you're programming in, by simply using TFVC VSTS for free. So I just don't understand how people are having that. So what I have to do is I have to go back in there and say, hold on, before you stop rolling your eyes and let me talk to you for a second, right? Because what we do from build, what we do from release, what we do from source control, what we do from work item tracking, could not care less what language it is. Could not care less if it's Java on a Mac or if it's Xcode on some other platform. We simply do not care anymore. And it was important for us to do that because we offer value no matter what language you program in. And I proved this. If you go back and watch my session from Ignite New Zealand, I was so excited to do that session because I got on stage with a Mac, a PC, and a Linux machine. And I let the audience choose which one of these machines do you want me to do my demo off of? What language do you want me to program in? And do you want me to deploy it to Azure or do you want me to deploy it to Docker? You choose while I introduce myself. And then when you're done, I'll do whatever demo that you've asked me to, because I know I can do any language in any platform. They chose the Linux machine, they chose .NET, and they chose Docker. 4 minutes later, I'm done. Right, our tools are so powerful and they can be automated so well that I did the second place too. I was like, okay, great, how much time do I have? They said, you have 16 minutes left in your session. I'm like, fine, what was number two? So I moved over to my Mac, I did a Java app, deploying the app services, and I did that in 4 minutes. So I'm thinking, guys, stop thinking this is just Windows and .NET. I can literally do any language you want in any platform that you want.
That's cool.
So have we got any customer case studies where it is somebody that's not a Microsoft house that's doing a full stack just by using VSTS as the orchestration for their DevOps?
The biggest one that we have right now is American Airlines. They are predominantly a Java shop who switched over from Atlassian and Bitbucket and all those names that you're familiar with over exclusively to Visual Studio Team Services. So they're using Gradle, they're writing in Java, and they're using everything that we have.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, so I mean, it's not Vapor, guys. We literally have a team. A lot of people don't realize this as well. We have an OSS team inside of the team services team. So if you look at team services, we actually have a group of individuals in our organization whose sole purpose in life is to make sure that the Java devs get love and that the Node.js developers get what they need and that everyone who's outside of the realm of .NET and Windows don't get alienated. We have plugins for Eclipse. We have plugins for IntelliJ. We have Visual Studio Code running on your Mac and running on your Linux machine. We have Visual Studio now literally running on your Mac, right? We have a version of Visual Studio for your Mac. Our tools are accessible everywhere. Microsoft has simply changed, right? We have PowerShell now open source running on your Mac and on your Linux machine. So it's not only Visual Studio needs to be given a new look. Microsoft as a all up, people need to realize that this is not the Microsoft that was demanding a Windows machine on every desktop. We're the Microsoft that is now coming to wherever you are on whatever platform you're running it on to come add value to your life.
One of the things I quite like is the marketplace, and I guess a lot of this is enabled by partners or yep. other companies going off writing their own bits to extend or customize. And I believe it's not just build steps and release steps you can customize. You can do some stuff in
Yeah, you can actually do. There's several different what we call extension points inside of team services. The most popular is clearly our build and our release system. People are really excited about that, and they're adding new tasks. But you can actually add your own hub. So if you were to go inside of team services, you'll see there's a code hub and a work hub and a build and release hub. You can literally add your own custom hub there. That is a tab that shows up as a first class citizen inside of the user interface. And then when your users click on that hub or that tab, they get whatever experience you want them to have. You can add widgets to dashboards. You can add extension points to where if you have a third-party system, for example, like Chef, when you want to make a connection to your Chef server, there's information that we need, and you can actually add what we call a service endpoint that you've configured and said, this is the information I need to collect. This information is sensitive, so I want you to protect it. But during my task and my widgets, I need access to this information so that I can then authenticate to that third-party system. You can even add those as well. So the system is designed such that not only Microsoft can extend it, but our partners and even our competition is extending team services. They're like, hold on, this is a lot more popular than we thought. We don't want to be the last guy out. So we have a lot of people who are actually competing with us who have extensions in our marketplace.
Now, Donovan, you know, one of my my main customer is a financial services customer, one of the biggest banks in America. Mm-hmm. And you know what it is with financial services. They don't like the cloud yet, right? At least
sure.
at least in the United States.
Sure.
And but you know, at the same time, they're looking at all these cool things happening in VSTS in the cloud, and they don't see. I don't know when can they expect something similar for the on-premises version of Team Services or TFS, for example. Because they're hosting their own private TFS on-premises. Can they take advantage of some of these features on-premises as well?
Perfect. So there's two answers to that. So the first one is TFS is 3 months behind Visual Studio Team Services. So what happens is we update Visual Studio Team Services every 3 weeks. It gets new features, new functionality, bug fixes, the whole nine yards. After a 3-month period, we package up all of those improvements, bug fixes, and performance enhancements, and then we push them down as an update to Team Foundation Server. So every 3 months, we push down an update, which is basically the last 3 months worth of innovation that we've been making in the cloud that we're now providing for you on-prem. So it's just a matter of making sure you stay up on the updates to get that functionality. If you really just simply do not want to wait, and sometimes there's features that stay in the cloud a little bit longer than 3 months for development reasons, we were able to allow people to use TFS on-prem before release management that was in the cloud was on-prem. But they wanted to use it immediately because they thought it was so much better than the on-prem version. So what we were able to do for those companies were their source code was on their environment in behind their firewall. Their TFS was on-prem behind their firewall. The environments to which they wanted to deploy was on-prem behind their firewall, but they wanted to use VSTS in the cloud for the orchestration of the release management. We were able to wire that up for them, and their source code never saw the internet. So all we did is we were able to say, hey, look, the source code lives down there. The agents that you're going to use also live on their premises, but we need you to basically orchestrate the movement and tell those agents when they're supposed to do what they're supposed to do and where they go get their assets from. So all of a sudden, a commit would happen, a build would trigger, release management in the cloud would wake up and say, okay, I'm going to reach back down behind your firewall and tell that agent over there to go grab the files from another machine behind your firewall and then move them across your network. I'll never see the source code, yet we're able to orchestrate the movement. So if there's features in the cloud that you're just dying to use and you can't wait the 3 months that it might take to get them on-prem, we have been able to allow our customers to have the best of both worlds. Their source code is securely stored where they feel comfortable on-prem, yet we're able to use some of the features in the cloud. And as they start to adopt VSTS, they'll start to realize that every line of code for Visual Studio Team Services is stored in Visual Studio Team Services. Office is there. The Windows team is moving there. Xbox is already there. So our most valuable assets, our most valuable intellectual property is already stored in the cloud. We trust it, so hopefully that'll start to get our customers to trust it as well.
Great. So what you're saying is that then there is pretty much, other than this three-month delay, there is a it's mostly a feature parity between the on-premises and the cloud versions of Team Services, correct?
Yep, I always joke that they're twins and one's 3 months older than the other.
Okay, that's a good way to put it.
Yep.
Hey, Donovan, I had one question too. So like for people maybe upwards in the organization who just want to get a sense for what's going on, there's pretty cool dashboards and things like you mentioned. You can kind of edit them inside VSTS. But I haven't explored it myself, but I understand there's ways to actually even connect this into Power BI so we could surface like kind of dashboards out about what's happening in our process, like our development process.
Correct. And that's going to continue to improve. We have a couple of adapters that will allow you to get certain information out of it. I think like bug tracking information, I think some of our work item tracking information is already being pushed out there. We're working with the teams like the release management team and the build team to find out what those data feeds need to look like so that people can continue to build their own dashboard. So there is some modicum support there today, but obviously we're going to continue to invest there and improve that experience so that you can build whatever dashboards and do whatever reporting you need to using Power BI and other technologies from Microsoft. Awesome.
Okay, so I mean we've seen a lot of changes in the last year, maybe a little bit more, in terms of cloud adoption and the accelerated way in which companies are now going for that. It's happening, you know, all over the place. In terms of DevOps, that's, you know, infrastructure as code, people doing continuous deployments of their Azure environments before doing a code deployment as well. So they're kind of tying the two things together now. What in your opinion, do you think is going to be the next big thing that's going to sort of change the game, or have a guess?
That's a good one. I think what we're going to see more and more of is what I call automating the automation. What I mean by that is that, as I think Russell might have said it earlier, is that you go inside Visual Studio Team Services and you get it set up and it just runs and runs and runs. That getting it set up, we still have some room to improve there, right? I mean, I've literally had to sit down and help people set up their demos, and they're about to go demo our product. I'm like, okay, if you can't figure this out, we have a problem here because it's not intuitive enough. I should not have to sit down with everyone who wants to do a demo of Visual Studio Team Services and set up their demo for them. So what I've been doing is generating like Yeoman scripts. We saw this at the Connect demo where I was able to right-click on a couple of items and literally have entire pipelines created for me. So I think the next big wave is basically basically black boxing our DevOps offering for you, to where it's just like I right click or I run a command, a very quick command from a command line, or use a Yeoman generator, and all of the stuff that needs to happen to build that pipeline, to set up my infrastructure's code, to be able to verify that everything's working, and all that's just going to happen automatically, to where we're going to eventually get to the point that I hope that it's just a checkbox. Like today, if you want to set up continuous integration, you literally just check a box. I want that to be DevOps a few years from now. I want someone to say, I have a Node.js application going to Azure, I check a box, and everything else just happens.
Right, okay. Cool. Yeah, I mean, it's getting there.
Yeah, we're getting close. I've got my Yeoman generator is really popular. It's open source. Already has pull requests on it because people are excited about it. The right clicking that we're doing inside of Visual Studio to set up complete pipelines for you using Docker are there. What you saw in Sonoma, again, from the mobile side. So all of us kind of attacked this at the exact same time, and we're going to get a lot of synergy on, okay, how are we going to help automate the creation of the automation?
Right.
Donovan, if I may just ask you one kind of very high-level question, because you've seen the kind of progression of DevOps at Microsoft since you've started over there. How long would it take a company the size of Microsoft, or even maybe a smaller company, to move from, a non-DevOps environment like they would traditionally have to a fully functional DevOps environment or workflow? What's the actual practical time frame that would take?
Every company I've ever worked with is different, so I wish I could say, oh yeah, 7 months, right? 7 months, start a timer, 7 months from now, you're going to be perfect. But it all depends on the attitude of the people involved. If your people are stubborn and arrogant and think that they know better and that we're number one and we're going to keep doing it the way that we've been doing it, you're in for a world of hurt, because the people is the hardest part to actually understand about that. So if we can convince the people that yes, this is something that we want to do, your transition will probably have a lot less friction and actually happen a lot more rapidly than it would in an organization where they're stubborn to change because they think they're doing it right. I've been doing it this way for 30 years. I don't want to change the way that we're doing it. It also depends on the tooling that they have in place. I know a lot of companies it's scary to think about that still don't have source control, right? Their source control is an idea of copying a file and dating it. And that's frightens me to my core that's how people are versioning software, like in very important companies. There's companies who have no adoption of automated unit testing, like just don't think it's important. They think it takes too much time. And so if you each an organization, it depends on like, so where are they on this transformation? Do the people believe? Do they have the right tools in place? Do they have the right process defined on what they want to do? Do they believe in unit testing? Do they have continuous integration? So everyone's going to be different, because every organization you meet is going to have some level of implementation already in place when you get there. And then what you're going to do is find what hurts most and go attack that next. But just think about what we've been doing here. Visual Studio 2015. No, Visual Studio 2005, right? That was the first time we delivered Team Foundation Server, and we delivered it on a 3-year cadence. So we were the company that you're talking about. And now we're delivering it every 3 weeks. It's taken us till now, right? So from 2005 to basically 2015 before we were able to consistently deliver every 3 weeks. And we're not happy yet. Right. This is 3 weeks is just where we are today. But you're constantly trying to improve. We're constantly trying to figure out, how do I take this 3-week cadence down to 2 weeks? How do I take this 2 weeks down to 1 week? How do I every hour that we have new value, how can I get that into the hands of our users? So this isn't something that there's a finish line for. Right? This is a journey that you start knowing that you're going to constantly be looking for places that you can improve this process such that you are constantly delivering value to your end users. I wish I could give you a date or a time, but there isn't one.
That's a good perspective right there. Thank you.
Sure.
All right. I think that's some really valuable information from Donovan, and really good perspective on all things DevOps, and really appreciate his input there. Guys, any more questions for Donovan before we let him go?
No, just sort of briefly, just an observation on that DevOps. There's a good video for listeners to go and watch if they're interested in how Microsoft internally transformed their DevOps process. So if you go search for that, it's a really great story, a good video behind it as well.
Right, yeah, I think if you go to Microsoft WAC DevOps, we used to have that call our transformation story there. So there's several of us who tell that story about how we've gone from the 3-year cadence that we were on to the 3-week cadence that we're on today. It's fascinating to hear all not only the changes in the tooling, but the process the people, the way we build our teams and organize our teams, we change so much to be able to transform. And a lot of customers are on that exact same journey. And we share this conversation and this story with lots of people because it's interesting to see them just kind of take a sigh of relief when they realize they're not the only ones who made these bad decisions, that Microsoft made the same bad decisions years ago and they had to correct them. And we're not these odd people. We just need to go and start adopting some of the things that they've done too to be able to make that transition for ourselves.
Awesome. That's a good and good response there. All right, so Donovan, again, appreciate you taking the time from your busy schedule to join us here today.
My pleasure.
Guys, thanks for all the questions and the feedback. Happy Thanksgiving to all the folks, at least in the United States, and we'll see you guys next week.
Take care, guys.
Bye-bye. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Donovan.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.